son, where'd you find this?
Buckle up, buttercups. It's time to get down to business. It's the Totally Legitimate Business Podcast. Totally legit.
Welcome back to the Totally Legitimate Business Podcast. It's your host, James, and I'm here joined by a very special guest returning for the second time. This is your second time on the show?
Yep, second time.
Sick.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Daniel Oglesby, baby. Yeah. Well, you're joining us from Colorado, correct?
Yep, Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Perfect. Super UFO lore out there. So we're already in right locales, you know.
That's right.
So today we're going to talk about a subject that's definitely near and dear to my heart, but it's the story of Robert Lazar and the wild claims that he worked at Area 51 and worked on retrieved, crashed alien craft. So you had suggested this. Is there a particular connection that you have with this story that made you want to unpack it? Because I remember you were also telling me how, like, you're on the fence. You can't tell if this guy's lying or if what he's saying is true.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it'd be fun to kind of do a little deep dive on Bob Lazar just because he is such an interesting character, and it's... I'm leaning a little more towards not believing him at the moment, but I'm super interested in hearing your thoughts to see which way you're kind of swinging with this. But he's had an interesting and questionable history and past. So
yeah,
I want to unpack some of that, but at the same time, you know, like I want to believe him because it's such a fascinating and fun story. Like I read his book. It was awesome. And the documentary that Jeremy Corbell made.
Corbell's, right.
Was awesome. Yeah. Dreamland, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of got me into it. I think I always kind of heard about him a little bit. And then I think when I first really got into him was when he was on the Joe Rogan podcast a few years back.
Sure.
With Corbell. His story is just fascinating. But yeah, we can get into that.
Well, I agree with you. It is definitely fascinating. There's definitely some plot holes, and mm-hmm. there's plenty enough convenient deletion of important pieces of his history that, maybe again, by design, maybe that draws, doubts to his credibility. But I think his story is interesting because it really is kind of the first thing in terms of a disclosure like this that anyone had ever known. And I think the two people associated with Bob Lazar that don't ever get enough credit are George Knapp, who was the guy who now works with Corbell, but was instrumental in the legitimate presentation of these ideas on the local Las Vegas news station, KLAS. And another friend of theirs, John Lear, whose dad invented the Learjet and multi-track recording capabilities, or multi-track tape machine. There's like a something related to music there, kind of like a Les Paul kind of shit. But anyways, those two guys are in the 80s and the 90s, they are like the rock stars of the burgeoning UFO conspiracy counterculture. And it was like a thing that emerges really from his story. Yes, people were into UFOs since Roswell. Yes, there was like a subculture of those kinds of folks. But Bob Lazar's story and George Knapp putting his story on TV and then that news story becoming internationally recognized, it's like a fundamental piece of the whole UFO conversation. Like some of the first realistic depiction, like X-Files. X-Files owes the entirety of X-Files to Bob Lazar's story. Like quite literally, it's just interesting in the the fact that it's still here and it's still such an super important part of the now developing UAP story.
Yeah.
And for me, the interesting part is not necessarily, we'll definitely get into the holes because I can also be on the fence about it. The interesting things to me are always the foresight. What if what he was saying is accurate? Well, nobody could know that until just recently when the actual details of these types of programs start to become, you know, talked about and disclosed. It's like still important. What he said can now in some ways be verified or eliminated because a lot of this information is like, it's possible that it could get released or at least disclosed to the point at which they could be like, he's totally making it up or he absolutely was there. But anyways, let's get into the, like a brief history of Robert Lazar, I guess is a good way to put it. I don't know if you have notes. I've got his Wikipedia page pulled up here. I also don't think we need to go into like super, it doesn't really get crazy until he discloses this shit.
Yeah.
But
no, that's good. Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. We should probably go over it just a little bit before we start picking the whole thing apart. But yeah, I don't have his Wikipedia pulled up, but I have a really interesting Reddit post that I found a few months ago that kind of, it just lays out every point, kind of debunking his story.
Oh dude, let's fucking do it. Can you in the chat, can you send me that link? I'll bring it up on the screen so we can both be looking at it.
Oh, you're going to love this. It like,
well, I, again, like that's the thing for me is I always, before I really try to pass judgment on anything, I really want to know some bullet point facts. Like I love timelines. Timelines make shit super easy for me to gauge what layer of fuckery I'm dealing with. Okay, here we go. I just got this link.
Got it in the chat for you. But yeah, maybe like a brief history here. So just off the top of my head, so Bob Lazar, I don't want to get into any of the questionable history parts, but just kind of like a broad scope of his story.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So he apparently what he says is he graduated from, or he went to Caltech and MIT, and then he had installed, or he wound up working at Alamos,
Los Alamos,
Los Alamos National Labs, and he says as a physicist there, and then in essentially he winds up getting a Q clearance government job, going into it not really knowing what it is, and then he gets there, he gets briefed on you know, little bits of the project, what he's allowed to know. He said it's all very compartmentalized, and essentially he just said he was brought in to work with this guy named Barry on a reactor that he said it was an anti-gravity reactor from one of these flying saucers. And he said that while he was there, he saw 9 of these crafts. But he only got to go inside of one and examine one. And he also mentioned while he was there, he was replacing another person. He suspects that they, and apparently that person passed away, and they, and he suspects that they were trying to like cut into one of these reactors.
Dude, that's the most fucked part. Honestly, yeah.
it's wild. Yeah. And it's just like, and he said, you know, it's probably out of like a desperate attempt because they didn't know how to take this thing apart to examine it. And so he's replacing this poor guy. And then, And he, and in his briefings, he was told, the craft came from, I forget which star system.
Zeta Reticuli.
Was it that one? Okay.
I think
Yeah, Zeta Reticuli. And then I feel like that comes up a lot in UFO lore. But, and so in that, some of them, they hinted at, that they came from, archaeological digs. And so that they're potentially ancient. And then of all the crafts, they were all completely different. And they were all perfectly intact except for one, which, he wasn't sure why, if maybe it was from them trying to cut into it. Like they supposedly did with the reactor, or they shot it down. Yeah. He doesn't know. He wasn't briefed on it. He said I think at one point, I didn't come across this today when I was like reviewing all this, but I think he said at one point he walked past a room where there was a body, an alien body or something, and he just saw it in the corner of his eye, but he can't like quite confirm because his memory is fuzzy. But so essentially, to get this clearance, this Q clearance, that he had to give approval to have his, phones tapped. And he had gotten caught taking his friends out in the desert to watch, these test flights. Like he knew about them, and he said they're every Wednesday night, 'cause that's when there's the least amount of traffic on the highway nearby. So he'd take his friends out there and they would film it, and they started getting kind of careless. And so like the third or fourth time, I think they went out there, they were actually in like an RV, and there's a bunch of them, and
they're like filming it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And John Lear was actually one of his friends that was out.
Oh, was he one of them? Okay. I didn't know that. But yeah, he got caught. And he knew he was in trouble at that point. And so he went in the next day to get debriefed on that. And basically these guys told him, you know, we've been listening to your phone calls, and, your wife's been cheating on you, and just saying and hinting at that he was in trouble. And so, you know, he goes home and he's, you know, nervous, obviously, and in not quite knowing what to do, he winds up reaching out to George Knapp, and I think John Lear helped put them in touch as well.
Yep.
And he figured if he could expose it, then and get the story out there, maybe they can't get to him because it would be in the public eye now. But initially, he used a fake name, and then he came out a little while later. And since then, he's done all kinds of radio shows and been in documentaries. He had his own UFO radio show for a little while. He has a book now, which I find interesting because he's always claimed he wants to be out of the spotlight regarding the subject, and that he's not interested in UFOs and this and that. But oddly, he's quite well known and caught up in this community. And this was all back, I should have clarified, this was all back in the 80s. I think he started working for Los Alamos in 82. Yep. And then I think he came on George Knapp's show in like 88, 89 was when all that was happening.
Late 80s.
Yep. And so his whole story and interest in his story has kind of been revamped over the past 3 years for our generation, you know, after he went on the Joe Rogan podcast, and a documentary that Jeremy Corbell made came out on Netflix called Dreamland. And he also dropped a book with Tom DeLonge's company, to the Stars Academy, by the same name. Yeah. So that's kind of like a brief
synopsis. That's pretty solid. That's pretty solid. That's pretty accurate to what his story is. It is kind of funny though, because now as you're kind of reciting it, there was all the shit that came out when he first did the first TV interviews and he made his like first wave of trying to get the story out there. Then he goes quiet, and then the only other really big documentations of his story are the Korbel documentary and that Joe Rogan podcast. And honestly, the Joe Rogan podcast, he goes into detail that he doesn't go into in when he was doing the, all the TV shows and radio shows or the movie. The Rogan podcast, he's getting down to like the nitty gritty emotional component of his life at that point. Which I feel like is, and if anyone is going to be the indicator to which he's lying, it's probably going to be that.
I think that's why he was so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
In part too. And he said he had a migraine.
Well, but they were also drinking, like they're all drinking a little bit of whiskey.
Yeah.
So like there's portions of it that seem genuine, but then there's also portions of it that are like, that's a very strange thing to be forgetting right at this moment. How convenient that you have a migraine that's making you forget these very important details. But
yeah, he hit some spots where he just like refused to go further as well. Like,
well, and it could also be like, this is why it's funny that it's still relevant. Because just like we see David Grush, who is, in my opinion, pretty believable, but also very guarded with how he says what he says, because he knows that he'll get in serious fucking trouble if he says something the wrong way or says something he's not supposed to. And I feel like there's probably still a level, if Bob Lazar actually was harassed to the level that he was, there's got to be a component of every time that he talks about this where he's like, I need to say nothing that I haven't already said, because if I say some new detail, this could create another serious problem for me. Mm-hmm. One thing that's interesting, though, and I didn't even know this until I was reading his page, his Wikipedia page. When Korbel does that documentary and he gets raided, right? It's presented as if they were talking about him taking element 115 out of Area 51, and the next day the FBI raided him. But according to FOIA, a FOIA request, it was, hang on a second, let me find it in here. The raid was part of a murder investigation to determine whether his company sold thallium to a murder suspect in Michigan.
A guy that poisoned his wife.
Damn.
And so that's what they're investigating. And he bought the chemicals from Bob Lazar's site.
United Nuclear. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we should make that clear too. That's what he does now, is he sells chemicals and things on a website that looks like it was made in the 90s.
Because it probably was.
I don't know if you've ever gone to it.
I have. It's pretty rinky dink. Yeah.
I wouldn't give them my credit card number, but it's.
But also, like, when I think about it, when I think about the kind of person who would be selling chemicals to, you know, high schools or their chemistry department or whatever, I kind of think it's going to be some people who have a website that looks like it's from 1994. And
There's probably not like an Amazon for chemicals.
No, not yet. You know? Not yet.
Like just a quick app on your phone.
It's a great idea. But yeah, you know, he really, before him, no one was really talking about Area 51. After he came out, there was a lot of talk about Area 51. And I think it's just whether
he put it on the map for sure.
Is true or not, he and George Knapp got a lot of people talking about it. And, you know, what happened then, what we've been seeing now in the past 10 years only is happening because of what those guys were doing in the late 80s, early 90s. So, mm-hmm. That's the part of me that's like, George, it's not necessarily Bob Lazar. For me, it's George Knapp. And it's not necessarily even Bob Lear or John Lear. It's George Knapp. George Knapp is a legitimate and still to this day respected news person. They take their reputations very fucking seriously. And he's bet his whole career on Bob Lazar, and it hasn't, like, he still has a job. He wasn't ridiculed. He wasn't, you know, ousted from journalism because of him pandering some bullshit, you know.
It was probably one of the biggest stories that
of its kind
station ever did. Yeah. So they were probably stoked on it. Probably not at first, but the outcome of it.
Yeah,
you know, it became worldwide news.
Definitely, so. Definitely on the outcome. So that's what, again, it's like, whether it's true or not, what we're seeing now, the disclosure stuff, the push for disclosure that we're seeing now, they started that. They started that way back then, and him coming forward was literally the spark that started the flame, or planting the seed for this to grow into what is now becoming a very vocal disclosure movement. Again, so we've gone over the bullet points. We got a good idea of who this interesting character is. Why don't we hit some of the things of why you think it's, what do you think are the things that poke the biggest holes in his story?
Okay. Yeah.
And I've got this Reddit
apart a little bit.
I've got this Reddit post pulled up too. So if you want a reference from this, I can just show this here.
Yeah, for sure. So I found this through a YouTube video, and I'm sorry, I'm blanking on what that channel is called right now, but he goes over this article point by point, and it's really interesting because it just kind of slowly picks apart Bob's story. So for one of the things, like you had mentioned, the element 115 thing. So part of the story that I had like left out, he sort of hints at that reactor, that anti-gravity reactor that, he couldn't even put his hand on. He would say like they would turn it on and it would resist his hand in the way that like two magnets. Opposing magnets would resist. Yeah. But with his bare hand. And he said what they used for that, the element they use was element 115. And this was back in the 80s. So, one of the things that, believers say is like, it's so wild. Like he knew about this element before it was even discovered. And I think it was in the 2010s at some point they
synthesized a few molecules for a few milliseconds. Yeah,
exactly. So it barely existed, they showed that it was possible. And so everybody took that as like proof. It's like, man, he was saying this in the 80s and da da da. But what the debunkers say though is, that makes perfect sense because that's the next logical element, on the periodic table, because they're saying like it stops at 114. I guess I was horrible in chemistry in college. Yeah, so that's
not my strong suit either. But yeah, we weren't super far off from 115, and it was only a matter of time.
Yeah. And they keep discovering new ones. So it was only a matter of time. So you can't use that part of the story as proof that like, he knew what he was talking about. Because yeah, exactly. It would have been a matter of time, but he's always hinted at that he took some with him from the lab, took it home. And George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell claim that they know where it's buried. And then I guess they had Bob had videotaped a reaction, with the element. And, apparently, and George Knapp had a copy, but he said he lost it. And Bob Lazar said he accidentally recorded an episode of The Golden Girls over this like reaction video that he had with some kind of chemical reaction. I don't know, a demonstration that he filmed. And so that makes it really suspicious. And then in that documentary with Jeremy Corbell, yet Bob's house gets raided by the FBI, like you were saying, and they hinted at what Jeremy Corbell says is I think they had like walked into the woods, no phones, no devices, yep. nothing to talk about.
He had a camera though. He had a camera recording it.
Oh, did he have a camera?
It's in the documentary. It's not, he's not filming video, but he's still got audio running.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I haven't seen the documentary since it came out, but, they went out there and then, and so kind of how they describe it now is that he then just gets randomly raided by the FBI and they're like, how did they know? Like, we went out into the woods to talk about it. We didn't have our cell phones on us. Like, and he said that some of the men that showed up directly quoted what they had said to each other in the woods. But you know, that's all kind of hearsay, like without proof, you know, maybe Bob just said that, you know? And also, you know, we later discover that the reason they were raiding his house was because they're of that murder investigation.
Yeah.
So they were looking for that chemical, not element 115. But then of course, you know, the believers say, well, that was the cover, you know, it was an excuse to get into
to be fair, if they were going to do that, that is what they would do. They would absolutely create some kind of cover story so that some dickhead wouldn't FOIA the fact that they raided his house looking for element 115 that he smuggled out of Area 51.
Well, that's why Bob's story is like the perfect story, because there's a conspiracy retort
plausible to everything. Plausible deniability. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that's, you know, why I kind of get stuck on the fence with him. But lately, I mean, I guess moving on to some other points here. So that point number four there, he told a crowd, it was like an interview he was doing. And what's awesome about this post is there's sources for everything. Like absolutely everything. Like this guy did his homework, whoever posted this. So in 93, he was doing kind of this public interview kind of thing. And he was asked, all right, if you went to MIT and Caltech, because they can't find any evidence that he did, they're like, name your professors from both colleges, just any professors. And so off the top of his head, he's like, Duxler and Hossfield is what it says here. And so when they looked further into it, like one of the teachers taught at Bob's high school.
It says both Hossfield and
then,
Duxler.
Yeah, no, and then the other one taught at Pierce College
where yeah.
there is evidence that he went to Pierce College and you know, his high school as well. So like that, you know, that does put, because you know, he kind of makes the claim like they just did away with any evidence that he went there, but he actually did, you know, like whatever this secret government program that are trying to cover up his educational history. But you know, when called out on it, he's found to be lying.
Yeah.
And even George Knapp agrees that he's lying about his education, but still believes his story.
Well, I think Corbell, as even says Corbell on the Wikipedia page, it's like Corbell's one of the people who perpetrated his story, but even he understands that there's some flaws. Well, I think it's definitely worth mentioning now, some other hilarious fucking criminal things he's had. In 1990, yeah. Lazar was arrested for aiding and abetting a prostitution ring. This was reduced to felony pandering, to which he pleaded guilty. He was ordered to do 150 hours of community service, stay away from brothels, and undergo psychotherapy. I want to say his claim here was that he was like doing their taxes, or like he was like doing some like mundane, like administrative portion.
He said that he installed their security camera and their computers, and then that was it.
Yeah.
So that's what also brings, you know, his credibility into question, and how honest he is. Cause it, like, he shrugs it off like, yeah, I just installed some computers, who cares, you know? And then, but in reality, he was the one interviewing, the prostitutes that they're hiring at this brothel. And like, that's what he got in trouble for. Yeah. And I saw some rumor too, that, something about installing cameras into the rooms there.
I mean,
which would definitely be, you know, for blackmail. So
yeah. Oh, for sure. Or, you know,
so super questionable stuff.
Other strange and nefarious purposes. And then, yeah, there's a bunch, he's got a bunch of United Nuclear associated issues. 2006, Lazar and his wife, Joy White, were charged with violating the Federal Hazardous Substances Act for shipping restricted chemicals across state lines. And then, oh yeah, here's that line. Author Timothy Good and filmmaker Jeremy Kenyon Lockyer Corbell, who have perpetuated Lazar's story, concur with this assertion. The criminal activity is really suspect. It's very strange. It's like, a lot of them are, I want to say there's some other, I guess the other thing would be the 2017 raid for the thallium sale. But I don't know. It said in that Lazar is not listed as a suspect in that investigation. So, I don't think he ever really got in trouble for that. It was just another run in with the law. But it's, you know, those are hard to overlook, in the sense that if you're judging somebody's credibility and claims like this, that doesn't necessarily help their case a ton. Now, also in the sense that this is all post his Area 51 time. And the claim here is that the government has made his life so difficult at this point that he has to scrimp work from wherever he can get it. And, you know, United Nuclear doesn't really take shape until a little bit later, like later in the 90s. But, you know,
yeah, I
don't know.
In which, you know, now he sells posters of his drawing,
T-shirts,
the sport model,
yep,
craft he worked on. Yeah.
Yeah, here, actually, yeah, you know what? This might be funny. Yeah. Just for fun.
Uranium ore.
Yep. $150 fucking dollars.
Well, and that's one of his claims too, is that he's never been in it for the money, but his history kind of counters that.
Yeah.
But I will say, to his credit, his stories always stayed the same. And he for the most part, he seems pretty at ease answering questions about it. Not so much on Joe Rogan, but I think he knew Joe Rogan would grill him, and because he does with most of his guests.
No, you know? For sure. And honestly, I've watched all of those episodes. I made another hilarious observation. I don't think Joe Rogan likes Jeremy Corbell. Or at least
I don't think so.
He is very annoyed by Jeremy Corbell. I don't think he just uses Jeremy Corbell to get bigger guests like George Knapp or Bob Lazar. But yeah, and I mean,
seems that way.
There was a large portion of that interview too, where like you can tell Rogan wants to press a little bit more, but he was also going pretty easy on him because he didn't want to fucking scare him away. I mean, really,
scare him away.
What's crazy is that when he first came out, he did a lot of talking, and then as theoretically the threat increases against his livelihood and well-being, he retreats into himself and doesn't really say shit for a long fucking time. George Knapp really kind of perpetuates the story. Bob Lazar himself doesn't really do much until the new push for disclosure, Tom DeLonge, and to the Stars Academy, all those guys coming forward, up until David Grush and what we're seeing now. Again, like his story was crucial to the larger discussion of do we have this shit? What kind of technology are we talking about here? Do we have the ability to fucking interstellar travel? I don't know. David Grush is another one in the sense that like he could be making it up, but at least David Grush has a provable backstory. Like David Grush has is bona fide. He has a track record. He doesn't have a crazy criminal record. You know what I mean? Like he has the type of life that you would expect a buttoned up military person who spent their entire life in the military or military adjacent to behave. There's like this renegade mad scientist component to Bob Lazar that is not what you would typically see from people who are going to be doing some of the most cutting edge. And in my opinion, like it's just not, I don't foresee a lot of those people being as adept with storytelling as Bob Lazar is.
Yeah, well, and it's wild how similar David Grush's take, at least what he's been allowed to talk about, is to Bob Lazar's story about, you know, these special access programs and how threatening they are. Like if you try to leave or share any information the way that he's doing.
And
the only reason Grush can do it is because he didn't sign on to any of those special access programs. He was just asked to investigate them. And I've seen in some of the recent interviews he's done, and because people ask, you know, like, why are you talking about it? Why do you get to talk about it? He's like, well, I wasn't a part of it. But that's also what makes his testimony questionable too, because it's all, you know, just believe me at my word and produce no evidence, you know, unless he gets a skiff, obviously.
Well, that's the thing. Is he actually has the ability to be like, I can't say that open court, but I have the ability to discuss and disclose classified information to people who are allowed to hear it. That's where it becomes a game changer. And again, the whole reason he was really investigating it is because they wanted to see where this fucking money was going. And it turns out they were lying about where it was going, and it was going to fund like some fucking future technology research that the government had no opinion on or ability to weigh in on at all. And they even talk about it in the Rogan, Corbell and Bob Lazar episode. A briefing had just come out around that time, and it was a high ranking individual in the Department of Naval Intelligence or something, like somebody high up in a branch of the military that would be overseeing a special access program like this, like future weapon technology kind of shit. And he's basically having an argument with somebody from Bigelow Aerospace, maybe.
That name comes up a lot.
Yeah. Well, especially in the 90s, because he was kind of like dominating that space in the 90s. And he personally wasn't in charge of, but it had speculated that Bigelow was the contractor that was given one of the contracts to retrieve downed craft. And that's why Bigelow knew so much. And that's why Bigelow was always able to be on the cutting edge of the shit, because his company was tasked with the program of, or was one of the companies tasked for craft retrieval and reverse engineering. But
And he had hired Bob Lazar too, I think, for like 2 years. Mm-hmm. And gave him a lab and everything. And then I guess he wound up letting him go because he, I think it was during the brothel investigation. And apparently he didn't even use the lab. He just used it to store his furniture.
Oh.
or something.
Cool.
I read something about that today. I was like, man, this guy, he's a character.
He had a brothel to run. All right. Cut him some slack. You know, he'll get to the lab when he has time.
Yeah. I think that's in this list here too, but yeah, exactly. He's busy interviewing prostitutes. He didn't have time for Bigelow Labs.
I mean, Bigelow Labs sounds boring as shit. You know, most people, when given the opportunity to interview prostitutes over doing some science in a lab, you know, they're going to choose that every time. Can you fault him for that? Sure. Yes, we can. We absolutely can. But yeah, you know, I guess the whole point of that tirade is like, how he laid it out back then is what we know now by other people who have come forward. It kind of is how that world operated. And, you know, in the 80s and 90s, the stakes were higher. Also in the 80s and 90s, this kind of gets breezed over. I remember in like the beginning days of the fucking internet. This was like one of the first things I stumbled down. Early 2000s, when I had access to internet and computer, I went down the Area 51 rabbit hole. I was in one of the first internet rabbit holes I got sucked down. You know, maybe this might have even been before 9/11, like long fucking time ago. And even then, God, I completely forgot the point I was going to make. All I'm trying to say is this shit has been around for a long time, and that is a world that historically was not seen into. And the only real conversation at that time that was being had were by really crackpot people. Even John Lear, who is, he also has bona fides, but he claimed to know way too many specifics about alien races that he probably picked up from some of the kookier people in the alien conspiracy realm. But at that time, in the late 80s, early 90s, there were a couple interesting things going on. Bigelow historically also owned Skinwalker Ranch for a period of time. But in the late 80s and 90s, crop circles were a big thing and cattle mutilations. Here's another layer of this story that's undeniably true. This shit was happening all over Colorado, Nevada, all over the Midwest. These cows, like surgically stripped apart. Let me see if I can find some here. And I don't know if, how can I even find this? How do I turn off safe search? Jesus Christ. Off. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Here, I'll show these. These were, you know, these are real things. Like these cows were, their delicate glands were sliced open with laser precision. I heard somebody talking about it, and it was, they were saying like it, the shit was at the cellular level. Like this is cut up. This is all at the seam of the cells that connect to make that tissue. That's how it's like. There's like no blood. There's no footprints. And these are being found all over the place. Heavily fucking documented. Sensitive organs missing. Laser-like precision. And there are plenty of people that said this shit was humans. There's plenty of people that said it was UFOs. At the end of the day, it was actually happening. Local law enforcement, motherfuckers who do not play around with kooky conspiracy ideas, local law enforcement were like, I have no fucking idea what this is. Never seen anything like this. This is very strange shit.
Yeah, and I think some of them were like missing internal organs without incisions as well.
No, dude, it
super bizarre.
Heavily fucking documented. Heavily documented. So I think there's this other, I keep bringing this up. Maybe I brought this up the last time. This book, I could tell you, but then you'd have to be destroyed by me, by this guy named Trevor Paglen. It's a book of, oh shit, that's the Janet Airlines. That's the Janet Airlines patch.
Just by chance.
But it's patches that are, there it is right there, Janet Airplane. Janet Airplanes are the planes that shuttle people to and from McCarran, Las Vegas Airport to Area 51. But these are all patches that are associated with previously classified, currently classified, or recently declassified, mostly Air Force, but airborne military flight patches. With every, typically with every program that the military does, they have a fucking associated patch. This one, oh shit. The program, ATIP, mm-hmm. right? This patch is for a program called ATOP. The five and one color red star mean this was Area 51. And I'm assuming the moon means it was a nocturnal test flight squadron. Let me read the definition here. Yeah, here you go. The letters ATOP on this patch stand for Advanced Technology Observation Platform, whose first flight was on October 28th, 1990. The Latin phrase furtum vigilans translates as vigilance through stealth. No further information about this patch or program is known. Officials at the Flight Test Center at Edwards Air Force Base claim this program depicts, the program depicted isn't one of ours. Anyway, this book goes into, this is another good one.
Oh yeah. It's, what does that say on it?
It's a couple different things. It says classified flight test, gustatus similis pullus, to serve man. And I think the bottom says tastes like chicken. But it's an alien holding a B-2 bomber with the radar equivalent of no trace. This one actually has some detail on it. This was the original version of a patch commemorating a flight test series involving a B-2 Spirit stealth bomber. The Greek sigma symbol on the test shape's outline signifies the unknown RCS value. The bomber, 509, refers to the 509th Bomb Wing, which operates in the United States stealth bombers from Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri. The alien is a reference to the 509th's infamous lineage. In 1947, the 509th was based at Roswell, New Mexico, home of the Roswell incident, which ensued after the 509th commander, Colonel William Blanchard, issued a press release whose headline stated, "Roswell Army Airfield captures flying saucer on ranch in Roswell region." The dog Latin phrase gustatus similis pullus translates as tastes like chicken. Note the knife and fork. This patch was eventually modified when Air Force officials insisted that the phrase classified flight test not appear on the design. In an updated version of the patch, classified flight test has been replaced with the words to serve man, referencing a classic episode of The Twilight Zone. This book is full of these things. And the only reason I'm reading these specific ones, this is another sick one.
Oh yeah. It's kind of ominous.
AF 10 cap special applications, Air Force 10 cap. 10 cap is an acronym for Tactical Exploitation of National Capabilities, a collection of programs that involve developing tactical battlefield applications out of reconnaissance satellite capabilities, which are normally thought of as strategic. Special almost invariably means black or highly classified. The phrase odorant dum metruant is associated with Caligula, the first century Roman emperor whose name became synonymous with depravity, madness, cruelty, and tyranny. It translates, let them hate so long as they fear. And then, you know what's funny? I haven't read this book in a while, not since all this shit has come out. And honestly, I think I'm going to read through this tonight because there is like already I'm like reading and seeing context that didn't make sense to me 10 years ago when I read this for the first time. But yeah, now is Jimmy, it's making, it's a lot of weird like shit that's clicking.
I looked it up on Amazon and it was like $500.
Really? Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah. Just look again. Cause yeah, when you told me about it last time, I was like, I definitely want that. And here, I'll look again.
Holy shit.
Did you find it?
Wow, it's the paperback version.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? And I think it's just, there's just a single copy.
What's so funny is I've ordered this book as a thing for, oh no, there you go. More buying choices, 22 new and used. Yep. Used acceptable, used good.
How much are those?
$50.
Okay.
But even that's expensive. Like I remember buying this for people and it was $14. You also might want to check not Amazon, but that's fucking insane that the paperback version is. Oh yeah. The hardcover is $85. Jesus Christ. And it's for sure used. Well, that is 100% in response to all the shit that's happened. And I almost guarantee like the same thing that was just clicking in my mind. It probably clicked in other people's minds who read that book. Trevor Paglen also has a book called Black Spots on the Map, where he like pretty strategically takes apart how to reverse engineer the black budget, which is the portion of the defense budget that doesn't get disclosed, which is what is paying for all of the programs that would be associated with this kind of shit. The whole reason
why there's congressional interest in the
UAP, dude, this is stuff right and because of that. this is the thing is because it's what is happening here is literally a crime. They're lying about spending money that our tax dollars. They've been running a multi-decades long program spending Christ knows how much of our fucking money on this shit, and we're not even allowed to know anything about it. And you know, I understand the implications, but sorry, like we've spent too much of our fucking money on this to know nothing about it and to have I'm not too confident on politics in general. I believe a lot of it's a little bit more of a fucking show than most people would like to believe. But even in the show where we elect our leaders, the leaders that we've selected from the slim pool of choices, even those people don't have access to or knowledge of this shit. And it's just insane.
Yeah.
That other book, Black Spots on the Map, where he talks about the amount of money that just isn't disclosed. We just don't know where it's being spent. And to think that even a slim portion of that, and it's a lot of fucking money. It's enough money to fix at least one of the problems that we have in this country. Yeah. And we don't know where it's being spent. And a lot of it, they're not telling us, or they're deliberately misleading it because we wouldn't approve. If we knew the details of this shit, we wouldn't approve it. That's the only reason you don't go to Congress. That's the only reason you don't involve, like Congress has been dealing in, Congress and Senate have been overseeing classified shit forever. It's not crazy to see these people tasked with it. The only reason you wouldn't include those people is because what you're doing, you know, is either so sinister or incorrectly motivated that they're not going to approve it. I don't know. None of that is supposed to agree with Bob Lazar's story, but all I mean to say is that Trevor Paglen, Bob Lazar, John Lear, George Knapp, people who have been talking about this shit for 40 years. I mean, bro, George Knapp was right behind David Grush in the congressional hearing.
Yeah.
The whole fucking time. Like, some of this shit makes sense. Some of this shit adds up. some of the shit that he was saying because of what he knew from Bob Lazar and John Lear and a select number of other people, some of the shit that he was saying 40 years ago, straight up is exactly how it played out. Like all the shit that is now being declassified or being talked about, it all lines up. And you only understand how that world works if you're fucking involved with it or you're talking to people who are involved in it. Trevor Paglen isn't involved in that world. He just started talking to people, and people like he was able to figure a lot of this shit out himself because he just knew the questions to ask and the context under which to ask them. But anyway, you were going to say something.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say the similarities, you know, just with Bob's story and the things that are coming out now. I don't know if that's just like a happy coincidence, but that's the one part in my mind where I lean towards believing him a little more. Because either if they really want to keep things under wraps, they're going to pick questionable characters like Bob, who then can be picked apart and their character can be brought into question. So he's kind of a perfect
plant
candidate in that way. So if you start thinking in that way, then it's like, man, maybe he is telling the truth, you know, but I don't know. That's why I always stay on the fence. But are they that brilliant to where they can really determine the character of someone that they want to nominate to be in this program? Or, you know what I mean? Like, are they that good at breaking down psychologically someone?
Dude, that's their business. Like,
well, it's just wild that, you know, and that was back in the 80s too.
Bro,
you know?
they were dosing people to see the reaction in the fucking 50s. In the 80s, they had a remote viewing program. They were paying scientists.
And I'm not trying to say like the 80s were a long time ago or anything like that. I just mean in the sense of like, you know, what's that show where like the FBI agents, they interview serial killers and like.
Mindhunter.
Mindhunter, like that. Yeah, like they learn that period of time. So all I mean is just development of
it. You got to think about when they were fleshing that out at the FBI. That's because enough documentation of psychology existed for them to be able to look at a series of murders and say with a very high degree of accuracy, this person is X years old. They are X this, X that. They live X. They drive X. That the show Mindhunter,
they put a rocket on their Honda.
Yeah, no, seriously. The show Mindhunter is they're not developing that science there. It was already a science. It was the FBI rolling it out as standard practice. So,
getting it
in like the 70s and 80s.
Well, they had it so like finely tuned and narrowed down to where it's like they teach a course
right,
on it.
It works.
And it works most of the time. Yeah. Like, so is, I guess that's what this.
Yes, you know, they absolutely. If we're entertaining that idea, they absolutely would have had the ability to do that, and that's not including the CIA, dude. I was reading a bunch of documents from some shit in the 50s in the CIA where they were talking about remote viewing, astral projection, controlling the wave state of your brain through meditative practices. Like, this is not. The shit goes deep. MK Ultra was another multi-decade program that was hidden from the American public and Congress and Senate. Records destroyed because of how sinister and fucked it was. But a lot of the science that they took away from that, it actually informed them how to successfully control perception on an individual and mass scale. Just look at shit now. You know what I mean? Like,
Also, with Bob, they probably knew he had lied about his education, potentially to work at Los Alamos, and because they dug into his background, he talks about that, you know. So maybe, like, they had something on him. They're like, "Oh, we can easily discredit this guy," you know. Like, let's bring him in here.
It wouldn't,
and he's more of an enthusiast, yeah, than no, like a professional.
I will also go back to the FBI and CIA. Both of those institutions, it was standard practice as far back as the 50s to always have dirt on somebody. Doesn't matter if they were on your side or not on your side. You always had some intelligence on them that could be used against them. Heavy documentation of both of those. And those are just two. That's not the military. Military, each branch of the military has its own psychological warfare division. Each of those scales up with varying degrees of intensity of the types of shit that they have been doing unchecked for the past 100 fucking years. So you know, it's not only do they have the ability, I'm sure every scientist, every single person that has to go through some clearance, everyone has skeletons in their closet. And anytime you get
right, his were kind of perfect. Yeah. They were really looking for somebody. They're like, this guy will be easy to dismiss because he'll go on continuing to lie about his education.
No, for sure.
You know,
well, and we also have to, like, I think it's also worth mentioning, you know, he could just be a plant. He could be telling someone else's story, but in a way that is guaranteed to be discredited or at least have enough doubt. Yeah. Exactly. And I also always reference this documentary, but Mirage Men was the documentary about one of the branches of military and a guy named Richard Doty, who was in charge of planting into the UFO lore at this exact same time, late 80s, early 90s, information and misinformation for the explicit purposes of muddying the waters and discrediting the entire argument by having bits of fake information. Now, what's weird about this is even Richard Doty says some of the shit was real. Like, some of the shit that he gave to people was like actual video of unknown craft. But then he would also give them easily debunked, or at least from the military's perspective, able to be debunked information that when they went public with it, you know, the government would say that's not true and it would burn their reputation. So it is worth at least entertaining that maybe he's a covert agent in that respect. His purpose is to spread. He did have some real experiences. Some of that information is real, but it's not how it's being presented to us. Isn't necessarily the kind of context that is correct. It's not the thing that gives us the best idea. Maybe it was an attempt for, on a much more public scale, the government to be like, yeah, if you come forward with this, will kill you. You know, look what happened to this guy, and he knows about all the shit that happened to the other people. So, I don't know. Again, like, I look at all the shit that's happening now, and that could all be bullshit too. We just don't know until we start seeing fucking UFOs. Until I start seeing alien craft, we just won't know if any of this is real or not.
Well, would you say you're on the fence with Bob Lazar too then?
Yeah, no, for sure. George Knapp, I'm not. George Knapp, I believe that he believes what he's saying. Bob Lazar, I'm on the fence. And again, like, that's why that Rogan podcast episode is crucial. That's the one. If you want to see if he's lying or not, somebody needs, and I'm sure they have, somebody who understands how to read body language. Analyze that one.
Yeah, I need to look that up. I'm sure there's plenty of those.
That is the one. If there's any like hard tells, that is the one for sure. Yeah.
Well, they did do like a polygraph test on him, and They came back inconclusive with two different examiners.
It was three. So first guy took it and said it looked like he was being truthful. Second guy took it, looked like he was being truthful. Third, or maybe even a fourth guy, looked at it and said it was inconclusive. And because one of the people said it was inconclusive, they all said they wouldn't rule on it. And I don't think they ever did another polygraph.
Yeah, so that is in this Reddit post as well. Let me see. And I think and he posted the original report.
Oh, wow.
As well. This guy, man, this post is so good. So it's point 11, I think.
Yep.
Bob did two polygraph exams. So one, he failed, and then on one set, and then passed another set, and so they ruled it inconclusive. And then the second one, four sets of questions, and he failed the first set of questions, but passed the next three. And then this was determined to be inconclusive too, I think, and they got another opinion, and he said it seemed like a story he learned by heart.
You see what I'm saying?
So it's like,
that's some fucking spy shit. That's some spy shit. Here's your backstory. This is what you tell people. This is what your purpose is. So
you think he really might be
a
plant?
It's very possible.
I've heard that rumor before, but
very possible. And the only reason I say that with confidence is because it is known that at that time, our branches, multiple branches of the military, were conducting misinformation campaigns in this specific area. And the prevailing theory is there. Maybe none of this shit is UFOs. Maybe it's all technology we have. And by putting these plants out there saying it is UFOs, it's meant to scare everyone, A, into like looking into it or disclosing about it, or B, the general public into and foreign enemies, like, oh shit, they have downed alien craft, I don't want to fuck with them. Like it's a power play, but really it's some advanced, you know, space technology, some advanced propulsion technology that we have. I don't know. Him reciting it like a story, and the fact that it's never changed and it's always been kind of like the same regimented tale, and the fact that multiple branches of the military had misinformation campaigns and specifically targeting the UFO community, you gotta at least entertain it. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta, enough of the pieces are there for you to be like, you know, it's not to say he was, but we can't say that he wasn't.
There was only one other thing that really stood out to me that really seems to discredit Bob as well, is his pay stub that he's provided. I guess it had the incorrect name. So I think the correct name was Office of Naval Intelligence, but on his pay stub it said Department of Naval Intelligence, I think. And then it had like an incorrect ID number. And I think it also had his wife's social security number instead of his on it.
Interesting.
Or something like that. Yeah. So it's, I think it's in this post. Let me find it. Oh, a fake W-2. The W-2 Bob 0.6. showed had.
Yeah, I see it. Yep.
Yeah. An employer that did not exist. It noted the Department of Naval Intelligence rather than the Office of Naval Intelligence. The W-2 was also typed and not printed. It also had a bogus MAJ-OMB number typed in when a legitimate number was already there and printed.
Yeah, I mean, they went
and
deep.
And then I can't remember where I heard the deep. Wrong social security thing. But so that's a pretty big red flag too. Oh, and his description of the saucers and 0.5 above that. He talks about how he was shown Billy Myers photos, which have, you know, been debunked.
Yeah.
And his description of like the Jell-O,
the
mold,
Jell-O mold in particular. Yeah. That was, it's really funny too, because that was going to be, I was going to make a suggestion of who to do a deep dive on for another one. And I feel like, I don't know if you're familiar with the Billy Meyer story at all, but
not as much as Lazar, dude, but yeah, I am. Okay. I stopped looking into it after I found it all debunked.
So Billy Meyer has some portions of his shit has been debunked. Some portions of his shit, just like Bob Lazar's, haven't necessarily been debunked. And there's a documentary that I'll send you the link to. But we should totally, you should watch that, at least that documentary and a few other things. And then we can come on and debate kind of some of the strong points with his shit.
Definitely check it out. Well, that seems to be a running theme with a lot of these guys, is they later do things to help push their story that aren't true, but, you know, claim that it comes from like whatever experience they did have. They're like, no, that part is true.
Yeah.
It gets hairy. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it all gets hairy, especially because it like becomes these people's identities. And like in some respect, how could you avoid that? That's just like, you know, what it's going to be. But that is also what makes it kind of fishy, because it's just like, what are you doing this for? What is the real purpose here? You know, we have to take them at their word for the attempts that are made on their life and the difficulties that are afforded to them because of the decisions that they made. But
send me that documentary and I'll
I definitely will. I definitely will send you the link to that, and we should totally do that on the next one. And that's probably a good spot to wrap it. I think we covered all the points.
Yeah, definitely.
This was fucking epic. It was super fun watching all the videos and kind of getting myself kind of refreshed on the story. Cause again, this was like one of the first things that got me into UFO shit. And I don't know. It was like fun going down memory lane again. This story is just so, it's like everyone's first conceptualization of Area 51. No one was thinking about this shit before Bob Lazar said it, and then after he said it, it became, you know, everyone around the world was talking about Area 51 and what crazy shit we got there. So
my only closing thought or question, I guess, is like, when are we gonna get a movie, like a cinematic film about this story? Because that would be such a great movie.
Well, and but see, there's the other thing, is like, if he was really out for money, don't you think he would have done that by now?
Like, he tried, and then I think the project fell through. It was a while back. Yeah. So
yeah, no one was willing to cooperate with that.
Yeah. But I hope that one day they do. Maybe To the Stars will do it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe Tom DeLonge. Maybe when Blink-182 is done touring, he'll make a movie about Area 51.
Yeah.
We can only fucking hope.
Hopefully.
Well, Sig, dude, thank you so much for joining me on this one again. And next time we're definitely doing Billy Meyer. This has been the Totally Legitimate Business Podcast. We're out of here. See you on the next one.
This has been the Totally Legitimate Business Podcast. With your host, James Oliva. Executive producers, Clint G and James Oliva.
That's obnoxious.
Sound design, mix, and master by James Oliva.
Literally no one cares.
For more Totally Legitimate Business, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Totally Legitimate Business, or add us on TikTok at TLB Pod.
When will this end?
Thank you for listening. Now get back to work.
Move it along, buddy.